listening to Arkansas Prep Extra, powered by Scorebook Live, a podcast exclusively for high school sports in Arkansas. Here are your hosts, Nate Olson and Kyle Sutherland.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for joining us on episode 33 of Arkansas Prep Extra, powered by Scorebook Live. I'm Kyle Sutherland, alongside our baseball guru, Kevin Bohannon. And if you like what we've been doing, make sure you're subscribed to the show. You can do that on Spotify. And, of course, always listen on scorebooklive.com under the Arkansas tab. Make sure you are subscribed, though, so that way you always are notified when we release an episode, as we do each and every single week. And the 2021-22 athletic sports year is complete. We wrap that up with baseball, soccer, and softball at the Benton Athletic Complex during the weekend of champions that was initially supposed to be Thursday through Saturday that ended up going into Sunday. As Kevin, of course, you know, we couldn't get through the whole year without Mother Nature getting involved one more time. We knew that that would happen. But nonetheless, a great weekend, a lot of fun. Kevin, I know that you were covering most of these from remotely. You had to travel over the weekend and coming back home. And so it was a great year, a great weekend overall. And so right now we sit and wait. After we recap this, we sit and wait until football season.
Yeah, and it, as you wrote yesterday, when you wrote turned in your last article for the 21-22 school year, it's really kind of bittersweet. We've been blowing and going for the past 6 months. You know, we rolled out the football season. Of course, the basketball coverage was phenomenal. And then we took baseball and softball coverage to the next level in this state, and it's something that we can be proud of. But now, and it kind of gets really started for me because a lot of the kids that just finished up their high school seasons, they're going into travel ball season. So we're going to have a lot of fun. Our first event is the weekend after Memorial Day. So while their high school season is done, they got a lot more to look forward to for the second part of their season.
Yeah, and I sit here and talk about how, like, you know, it's going to be nice to get a little break, but you're about to start travel ball, and Jared, who will be talking to us in the next segment with some softball, he's going to actually already started travel ball. They started last weekend, so yep. He's got a long summer ahead, and so I'll get a little bit of a break in there before I start the football previews and everything like that, but it's just trying to enjoy it now because I certainly haven't. I thought by Monday I would slow down, but it seems like it's been going even faster. And as luck would have it, my daughter is in one of those fussy moods, and so it's been a long day already. But you know, we're gonna get through it. So
it's always fun.
Oh yeah, you gotta love it. You gotta love it. So we'll kick it off in 1A baseball as we always do. It was a definitely some happy times. I know that the parade in Taylor will be quite fun as the softball team celebrates their fifth straight state title, and then the baseball team defeated Nemo Vista 10-4 in the final. I believe was that one on Friday. I want to say I believe that was on Friday. And so, but yeah, Taylor wins 10-4. Josh Lindsay picks up the win in that. He pitched five innings, and then of course. I forget the kid's first name, but Humphreys was the one that came in for two innings there, gave up only three hits. And so, like I said, a really, really exciting time for Taylor right now, winning both baseball and softball. I mean, it just seems like pretty much once those kids were born, they pretty much just pick up a ball and a bat and get rolling with it.
Yeah, congratulations to Coach Brian Fowler. I got to know Coach Fowler over the past few years, and you know, Taylor was in the 2019 final. They lost to Biola 6-5, but this was their coronation. They had a big sixth inning. They sent the entire lineup to the plate. They scored four runs on three hits, and you know that was all they needed. This is a really good team, and you know, Coach Fowler just said these guys just never give up. That was obvious how they took care of Mount Ida in the semifinals, 11-1, after beating them the previous week 5-4. They just kept grinding. They beat Ouachita earlier in the year 13-7. They lost in the regional final. But I didn't think that was the last we hear. They had a really good setup. Of course, they were able to pull off the mild upset against Izard County. So congratulations to the Tigers. And the Nemo Vista Redhawks, they weren't expected to be there. So congratulations to them on a great season. They won their conference. They won their regional. State finalists is nothing to shake your head at, but yeah, it's going to be I think the town of Taylor will shut down this next week when they have the parade.
Man, and look at the top of the lineup there with Smith and Cranford. Both of them combined looks like to go 6 of 7, and each scored 3 runs apiece. I mean, that was pretty big. Also, Preston Smith had a pretty big day, going 1 for 2, scoring 2 RBIs there. But that top of the lineup, man, I mean, I don't know if you could really ask for much more than that.
Yeah, Peyton Smith, you know, going into that sixth inning, and Taylor was up 6-3, I believe. He singled, stole second, and that's all it took for him to get that the rally going in that inning. So if you got a top of the lineup that really sets the tone like that, it seems like they're always coming up at the beginning of the inning, not just the beginning of the game. And when you have that kind of talent up at the top of the lineup, you can score a lot of runs.
And Jared, now one thing that we're going to at least touch on, and I'll ask you to do the same for this, is we're going to just talk about maybe some early contenders for next year, just like some way too early contenders. And, you know, of course, there's going to be plenty that have a lot coming back and plenty that are graduating as well. And so maybe who are 3 or 4 teams? I know that, you know, always in Class 1A, you've Wichita is in contention there. Of course, they made the pretty deep run this year. Westside, and then those 3 teams that we always talk about from the 1A2, Westside, Izard County, and Norfolk. Norfolk, you know, I know that I believe that they've got a good bit coming back. So who are some teams in 1A, just a few off the top of your head to look out for?
Yeah, I think, you know, Viola had a down year this year after winning it in 19 and 21. Of course, COVID shut out the 20 season. But Wichita, they're going to return just about everybody. They've got a big lineup coming back. Taylor and Nemo, they had some seniors that were really big for them, so they may take a step back. Taylor just – they never take a really big step back. They just kind of reload. But, yeah, I'm really interested to see Coach Nail and the Wichita Warriors. Yeah, he was really big on this team coming in, saying if everything worked out, we might be there at the end. And they were just short of it this year. I think they got everybody back next year, and they can put it together for another chance at the big trophy, as I like to say.
And then in Class 2A, this one was kind of shocking at the beginning. Not shocking, it's just, you know, Woodlawn being the defending state champs, seems like they were definitely the favorite, and they came in and Bigelow put 2 runs up on them early. But then Woodlawn responded with those 4 and really just never looked back after that. They didn't allow a single run once that first inning was over, and just really took off, winning 7-2. And so what did you make of that performance?
You know, we had talked about last week on the show that Cale Edmonds had come back from Tommy John surgery on his non-throwing arm. He threw a couple innings in the first 2 rounds and then threw 5 innings in the semifinals. And we knew he was going to get the ball for the championship game. Competitors, they compete. That's what they do. And Cale showed, you know, he had to knock a little rust off. He may have some nerves and jitters going out there, but he's going to Crowder next year for a reason, and that's because he's a winner. And in fact, congratulations to Crowder College. They punched their ticket to Grand Junction in the JUCO World Series next week. They won on Sunday night 9-1. So congratulations to those guys. But Cale's going to add to that, you know, Arkansas pipeline that's going up there. Bigelow's good. Hunter and Carter Alexander, Bo Billick. Hunter Alexander got the start on the mound. Carter was behind the plate. They roughed Hunter up a little bit early, but sophomore Bo Billick came in and shut Woodlawn down. You know, Woodlawn got their runs early, and I don't think they scored after the 3rd inning, Kyle. So having Coach Craig Neumeyer from Bigelow, having somebody like Billick and Carter Alexander to really build around is going to be big for them next year. But, Coach Tommy Richardson said, you know, this is probably his best coaching job because of what all they had to deal with, underclassmen having to step up and fill the role that Edmonds, you know, left out. That was the big thing coming into the season. The one thing they knew was going to be there was they had their ace, but they didn't have him for 27 games. So it was really big. He had back-to-back MVPs. He only allowed 2 runs. One of those was earned. 1 walk in 111 pitches. He added 8 strikeouts. The Bears finished 29-6. Errors, you know, that happens. We saw that all weekend. The only game that was really clean was Harding and Ashdown, which was the best game of the weekend, in my opinion, because of how clean it was. But they fought through that, came back, and beat a very good Bigelow team that'll make some noise again next year.
And that was, of course, what I was going to bring up next was the Hardy Academy Ashdown game. But before we get into that, we'll definitely touch on some 2A teams. Where do you see? Do you see Woodlawn possibly going for the three-peat next year? Notice you mentioned Bigelow. I think you said in there that they've got some guys coming back. And so what do you think things are going to look like next year in Class 2A? And is there any contenders that are going to be moving up to 3A in the new cycle?
You know, Horatio, I haven't really looked at the classification too much. I know specific teams that will be moving up, like Harding and Valley View and things like that. But Horatio, they were really young again this year. I think that all that class was juniors. They came back. They're going to make a run next year. They won 20 games this season. Woodlawn will be going for their seventh straight title. As long as Tommy Richardson is there, they're going to be in the conversation every single year because of the machine that he's built down there. You look at Dirks, they've got a couple of guys coming back that can make some noise. Murfreesboro is going to graduate a few. Mansfield, it will be one to look at. They had a disappointing showing after winning 23 games in the state tournament. They got knocked out in the first round. So B Branch is going to graduate everybody. Well, Easton Swaffer, who should be the Gatorade Player of the Year, is in the running for our SB Live All Arkansas team and Arkansas Player of the Year. So some of the same teams, I'll be surprised if, you know, maybe a team or two, usually out of South Arkansas or Northeast Arkansas, maybe a Buffalo Island Central could be there in the end as well.
And moving up to 3A, so one thing I wanted to point out, it seems like it's just like a rinse, wash, and repeat that so many people tend to, and this is, I'm just calling this out because I kind of get tired of seeing it, that every time Harding Academy wins something, it's just always people on the outside just continuously trashing them. And so I wanted to really just come on here and say, as a private school kid, that really just, first of all, for grown men to be doing this, grown men and women to be doing this, it's just kind of sad. But also the fact, too, is that I want to say that I applaud these kids for the success, whether it be in soccer, football, basketball, I don't care what it is. I applaud these kids for working their butts off in the off season, throughout the season, and all that they do to continuously win state championships. And so, you know, just I saw all these comments on our feed, you know, on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. And instead of replying to them, I just figured I would just kind of say something exclusively about that. And so I want to congratulate Harding Academy on another state championship. Also Ashdown for getting there too. You know, just the fact that teams are getting there is an accomplishment in itself. You know, I've been a runner-up. I know exactly what it feels like as well. But certainly want to give the props where it's due to Harding Academy. We thought from the very beginning of the season that they would be the repeat champions. And, of course, Gavin Alvetti, he started it, and then Cade Smith came in. Those two have been an incredible duo all year. I know Alvetti will definitely be missed next year. But, you know, now that I'll get off my soapbox here and I'll let you analyze the game. But, again, congratulations to Harding Academy on yet another state title.
Yeah, Kyle, and I echo that sentiment 100%. But if you look at, and we said it last week, if there was one team in a one-game setting that could beat Harding Academy, it's Ashdown. They did it through five innings. They were up 2-0 going into the bottom of the fifth inning, and you know, Harding Academy just kept wearing them down. They were hitting Alex Kilback. They were hitting it hard, you know, 105 miles per hour off the bat. Cade Smith hit one to center field where the center fielder didn't have to move. A couple of line drives to the shortstop, third base. They were hitting it hard. It was just right to them. And teams that do that, sometimes they get frustrated. I talked to Coach Shane Fullerton after the game. He said, man, we just knew at some point we were going to get to them. If we kept staying with our approach, hitting the ball hard, they were going to start falling. They did. You know, he got up 3-2 and then tacked on a late run. Gavin Alvetti was 2-for-3 in the game. He started the game, went five innings. And he's really good because he throws strikes. And coming into that game, I think he had 88 strikeouts and only 9 walks. And he can dip down from that submarine slot too, and he's 85 from there. Over the top, he's 87, 88 with, you know, so that gives every team a chance if you have somebody like that on the mound. And Coach Fullerton kind of he struggled with who was going to start the game. Was it going to be Alvetti? Was it going to be Smith, who was the MVP last year? Smith was obviously coming off a hamate bone injury off of his non-throwing hand. So they did bring him in for relief, and he was able to get the last 6 outs of the game. But, you know, congratulations to Coach Cross and the Ashdown Panthers. They had a great run, a great season, 26-7. They're going to be back next year. They got some underclassmen, I think, that'll be really good. But, you know, Harding, they lose Gavin Alvetti, but they don't lose much after that. They're going to be moving up to 4A. And with Valley View moving up, you got to think that Harding Academy is going to be one of the favorites in 4A next year, because we're gonna have an overall poll that we'll be releasing on Tuesday. And don't be surprised if Harding Academy is up there towards the top.
Then going to Class 4A, this was definitely the one of all the state championships, maybe of all the state championships in terms of soccer, softball, baseball, all of it, that had the most fireworks. Of course, it went into extra innings going to the 10th. And Valley View got off to a very hot start. They scored 5 runs at the top of the 5th, and then Harrison countered with 2-1 each in the second, at the bottom of the 2nd and 3rd. Then scored 5 of their own, Harrison did, in the bottom of the 4th. And then this thing just was – I was catching it on TV because I had to do my game stories and everything like that. But, Kevin, this one just about made your head spin with all the things that were going on there.
Yeah, you know, Friday night under the lights, it was something to behold. Started out just kind of like we thought it would. Dylan Block was on the mound for the Harrison Goblins, gave up 3 runs early. Eli Cerulis kind of settled in on the mound for the Blazers. But then Harrison showed what they've been showing for the last 2 or 3 weeks, that lineup, you just can't hold them down very long. So they ended up getting to them, getting a 9-3 lead. Then it was 9-8. And then Valley View tied it up. So going into extra innings, Harrison got a lead off single, or lead off double, triple. It was a lead off triple into the right center field. So Josh Allison from Valley View, the head coach, loaded the bases. That was the only way. He brought in a 5th infielder, Kylan Madden, the senior that's going to be playing collegiate baseball next year from Harrison, had only been one of five going into that at bat. And they thought about bunting, but Kylan told the coach, said, "Look, I can get the ball in the air. I can get that sacrifice fly. We can win this game." That's exactly what he did. He showed the senior leadership that he'd shown all year. You know, he came in, he got to pitch the back half of the game as well. So congratulations to Harrison. What a run, 22-12 from a team that was a 4-seed to a 2-seed and now a state champion. That was an exciting 3-week run for those guys. They won games 17-11, 10-9, 12-14-6. It didn't matter. They're going to score a lot of runs.
Yeah, that was one of those refuse to lose teams. And if you like it, see, I don't know if you and I have ever actually really even talked about this, but I'm kind of one of those guys that I like pitcher's duels. I like the 1-0, 2-1 games. I love those, whether it's baseball, softball. But if you're one of those guys, this is not your – and I like these kind of home run derbies too, so I know there wasn't like, you know, a ton of home runs or anything, but these ones that are high-scoring games, and I like these kind of games too. But if you are like a major pitcher's duel guy, this was not your kind of game. 25 total hits. And it's not shocking with considering how long it went and how many runs were scored. But, yeah, I just wanted to point that stat out because I'm like, okay, I figured there's probably a lot. But then I look at it and it's 25 combined. And so, yeah, plenty of fireworks. And, man, I can't even imagine the heart rates of Harrison fans. You just went through – what all that right there, and especially that Huntsville game. I covered a few of the games with Eric Taylor from the ADG. We sat next to each other for 3 or 4 of the games, and we talked probably about 20 minutes for that game, just kind of like the whole thing of all that went down in Nashville. But you talked about in the last bit there on 3A about how Harding Academy is going to move up but that's going to make even the Class 4A more competitive. But how do you see that shaking out with a Harding Academy moving up? Because, I mean, hey, people, like I just, you know, called out a second ago, there's plenty of people saying that they should play higher up. Well, they're doing that. So how do you see the 4A playing out with them being in it now?
You know, when a lot of people say they should play up, that school has 200 kids. So they should be a Class 2A school. They played up 3A, but they're going to play up 4A next year because of the new equitable law that the AAA put into play. So Nashville's going to be back. They're going to be better next year. I think Fountain Lake's got a few coming back. Arkadelphia will be one to keep an eye on. They've got a good junior class that's coming back. So some of those teams from the South, and then you got Huntsville. They're going to have some guys back like Amos Mays, a couple other guys on that pitching staff that, you know, took the Eagles a good long way. And then Lasky Academy, Kyle Lone Oak. It's going to be loaded. Lone Oak will have Steele Leaves, Jackson Engel, and Tripp Sullivan back next year. The three-headed monster, they're going to be juniors next year. So, you know, Lone Oak, Harding Academy, it's going to be loaded. 4A continues to be my favorite classification. It's going to be a lot of fun next year.
And then going up to Class 5A, this was one that was loaded this year. I think it was 2 weeks ago that we just literally went through each of the Super 7 teams and broke down each one because it was so incredibly close. You know, at that time, there was obviously a lot more involved that were contenders for the state title. But this was another one that was extremely entertaining. It actually got, Kevin, I don't know if you heard about this, but it got kind of chippy before the game. There was I guess someone from the student section that was all dressed up from Van Buren and was kind of, he was having some fun, but definitely giving it to Marion quite a bit. And Marion started jawing back at him and all this. Well, then they come out, Marion does, and I think it was 7 runs they put up in the first inning. The first 2 innings lasted like 2 hours. We started this game at around 3 or 4 o'clock, and it was scheduled to end at 9:15. It was just absolutely incredible. But then it started picking up, you know, once we got into the later innings. But 11-6 was this one, Marion over Van Buren. And so, what did you make of this, kind of how it all started out and when it was just all these runs being scored?
You know, Devin Gaddis, who threw the 8-inning complete game against Jonesboro in the second round last week in Hot Springs, he did his job. You know, 6 of those runs were unearned. Yeah, they got, you know, 4 hits, but the defense had 2 errors. And they led off the game, Gage Watson for Marion, a dribbler to second base. Second baseman dropped it. And then it just kind of compounded from there. But the thing about Van Buren is they never gave up. They scored 3 in the bottom of the inning. Chase Armstrong, the junior ace from Marion, yeah, he was the only 90-mile-per-hour arm of the weekend, but he struggled with location. He couldn't throw the ball over the plate. If you got a 7-run lead, just throw it over the plate, let your defense work for you. He wasn't able to do that. That gave Van Buren a little life, but Marion just kept their foot on the throat. It didn't matter who they brought in. Eli Gilworth was the second pitcher for Van Buren. He gave up 4 runs. It was 11-3. But then they brought in Connor Brady from behind the plate. And Connor Brady, who's going to Eastern Oklahoma next year, he got the semifinal win over Batesville 12-3 in a complete game. He shut Marion down for the rest of the game. So Marion kind of cruised. They were able to bring in Ben Girard, who got that shutout win over Benton 5-0 in the second round. So, you know, kudos to Marion. Van Buren had a great 2-year run. I think those kids went 52-12 over a 2-year period. But Marion, they've got some young talent. They do graduate Gage Watson, but they're a team that's going to be, you know, in the running next year, along with Sheridan, Benton. They'll have Jake Jones back. I know they're going to lose a couple people. Sylvan Hills is going to be another team. Little Rock Christian, a lot of those same teams, and of course Jonesboro as well. They're going to be in the mix. They graduate Josh Heinemann, Ty Rhodes, but I would look for the Hurricanes, just like every other year, to be in there as well.
You know, you mentioned those teams, a lot of them that we've discussed all season. Where do you see, looking in the 5A South there, you know, El Dorado was a team that really was hot for most of the year and then kind of struggled there at the back end of the season. And where do you see them? I'm not sure where they're at as far as, like, how many seniors they have and all that.
Yeah, Austin Jobb's going to go pitch for Crowder. They've got a couple other guys. And this was big for them, but somebody like Lake Hamilton, Coach Matthew Wigan, who learned under Coach Mike Moore at Sheridan, they're going to be good. Lakeside had a lot of underclassmen. Brennan Browning is a really good UCA commit that plays center field for them. So, and then you got Sheridan. They had some seniors, Ashton Branson, Connor Canterbury. But you know, Sheridan's going to be good every year under Mike Moore. That's just a matter of how good they're going to be. So, those are a few teams. The South could be a lot heavier next year as far as, you know, yeah, we had a 3-way tie for first this year, but I think you could see some of those teams that were in the middle of the pack, like Whitehall, Hot Springs, Lakeside, Lake Hamilton, that could really get a push for that conference title.
And then last but not least, as I always say, in 6A, Conway 10, Bentonville 7. Hey, another yet very exciting game. I mean, this was one that Conway had a big lead. It was 4 runs scored in the first inning or right on there early, and then Bentonville just continued to come back. But Conway punched back, and I know that there was a polarizing opinion there of whether the starting pitcher should have been taken out sooner. There was a lot of talk about this, you know, at the game, of course, whether Austin Rainey should have been pulled early. And I believe I had to go cover another game at this. I believe he went back in, but I'll let you kind of go through all that.
Yeah, I was one of those. And Austin Rainey threw 2 innings. He was at 38, 39 pitches. That's what Coach Leighton Harden had done all year. He had his starter. He had his middle reliever. He had Hugh Hill to bring in. Hill didn't have it. So I know the probably the first time in Class 6A history, or the top classification, the starting pitcher was brought back in. You can do that in high school baseball. You can re-enter, or if the guy is somewhere else in the field, you can put him back on the mound. And that's what Austin Rainey did. He went 5 2/3 innings. He gave up a hit or two, had 4 walks, but that wasn't, you know, that big of a deal. Will Thompson got the scoring going in the top of the first inning, or excuse me, in the bottom of the first inning, with a big 3-run blast that went over the 355 sign in right center field. That was a huge for them. They just hit the ball all day long. You know, Conway, that they did something. You know, they'd been doing it with pitching and defense and that three-headed monster of Rainey, Proc, and Hill. But, you know, kudos to the bats that, you know, broke out on Thursday for the Wampus Cats. And they held on there late. Bentonville's got a really good team. They've got some underclassmen. Rowan Christensen, sophomore catcher. He's going to be back next year. One of the best sophomores in the state. So Bentonville, they should be really good next year, even though they're going to graduate some guys. But they had a 3-hole hitter, Steven Grzuski. Sorry if I butchered that last name, but he's about 260, left-handed, really good swing. And they got some other guys, too, that are going to be back. So wouldn't surprise me if you see these two getting some run towards the state title again next year.
And so we've talked about, especially Conway, a good bit there from the Central this year. We talked about Bentonville some, but the majority of the season until we got to the back end, it was Rogers, and, of course, it was Harbor there from the beginning, just because Harbor, as we said so many times, he played that national competition and really just for the most part ran through their conference schedule there until the end. But – you know, them along with Rogers Heritage, I know, made a good run this year. And, of course, you got to look at Catholic is another team that I think about, and also Cabot down there in the Central. And so how do you see the 6A playing out overall along with Conway and Bentonville?
You know, Catholic's going to lose Lucas Greer, Luke George, Kate Cartwright, but they got some good young talent. Brooks Ward is a sophomore outfielder to look out for. He made all-conference this year. Conway, of course, will be back. Cabot had some good young talent. Aiden Velasquez on the mound. He's going to be back. I think their third baseman was a junior, Abe Owens. He hit 7 home runs, which was up there toward the top of Class 6A. North Little Rock, they're going to be North Little Rock. I think they got some good young talent there. It's just a matter of how they'll foster that talent and see if they'll bring the right guys to the forefront. Fayetteville is a team you got to look out for next year, Kyle. Jake Pinnell graduated. He was their ace this year. But you got Landon Schaefer, who's a top 15 player by Perfect Game. He's committed to the University of Arkansas. He's a legit MLB prospect at 6'2". He's a shortstop. They're going to be good. Harvard, they're graduating some guys, but they've got some really good ones coming back, led by Ross Felder, who threw a 2-hit shutout in that state tournament. So a lot of the same names, but I think that you'll have a lot more parity next year as well. You won't see teams really running away with it like Rogers did this year. Harbor, they're going to be just as good, but 6A is going to be a lot of fun next season, Kyle.
And that will wrap up our baseball segment for the week. Of course, or I guess the season. And then we got, like I said, Jared here in the next segment to talk some softball. But Kevin, again, you've got the travel ball with the prospects this year. Where are some places that y'all are going to be going?
Yeah, we're going to be going over to Memphis for a little warm-up tournament. We'll be at the Chad Wolf Classic in Fayetteville. A couple trips to Atlanta for the WWBA, Hoover for the PG Select, and then the PBR program invite down at Lake Point in Emerson, Georgia as well. So really looking forward to the schedule. Got a really good group of sophomores out there. Carson Wiggins from Roland, Oklahoma, Jackson Wiggins' younger brother. Christian Carnell from Star City. Brooks Ward, who I mentioned, from Little Rock Catholic. Great group of guys. I'm looking forward to being on the field with them.
And then I was going to plug the Twitter for A, so people can keep up with especially some of the guys around the state. Is it AR Prospects on Twitter, at AR Prospects?
Yeah, it's at AR Prospects. And then, of course, I'll be, you know, posting a lot, and from other travel organizations as well. Be tagging Scorebook Live and those, so we can make sure and recognize all the players around the state. Arkansas Prospects, the Sticks have a really good program. EA Performance out of Saline County. Let's see, Perfect Timing in Northwest Arkansas. Coach Bubba Carpenter has his Northwest Arkansas prospects as well. They'll be playing with us a little bit. So a lot of baseball talent around the state to get out there. If you're able to in the areas, I know there'll be some tournaments in Central Arkansas at UCA and UALR. You can get out and catch some really good showcase baseball.
Yeah, and the, even though the season's over, the baseball coverage doesn't necessarily stop. The softball coverage certainly doesn't stop. Kevin's is as good as they come, whether it be college, high school, it doesn't matter. If you're, like, if you're a baseball fan, you definitely want to follow him at Coach KBO, K-B-O, just like it sounds. And then, of course, AR Prospects. And then we'll have plenty of that stuff still throughout the summer. I'll be going to a couple of softball tournaments I know around here for some of the travel teams. So it doesn't end here. We don't have to wait until next, you know, late February, early March before you get softball and baseball coverage again. We're going to definitely continue it as we also cover the fall sports here that as we get through the summer and closer into the fall. But Kevin, excellent season, man. Had a great time. I'm sure we'll catch you soon. I know that we still got some stuff in the works for this summer, but it was fun as always, my brother.
Yes, sir. And got, and all of our listeners and readers, stay tuned. We got some really good content setting up with our all Arkansas teams. Just stay tuned. We'll have some really good material for us.
Absolutely. I echo that. Up next, we got Jared Hawthorne to talk some softball. We're now joined by Jared Hawthorne to recap the softball state championship. Six state champions were crowned over the weekend at the Benton Athletic Complex. And Jared, it's we talked about for the last month or so about how the season was winding down. It's the end of the spring sports season, the end of the 2021-22 athletic season for the scholastic year. And it wasn't, of course, any different than what we've seen normally in terms of the weather. We dodged every single bit of it until the final game in the 5A state championship between Benton and Greene County Tech. We were not able to finish that game out. We thought that we might be able to, but weren't. But what a season overall. You know, it's been great, of course, us being able to recap each week and preview the next week as we've done since the beginning of the year. And we'll get into these state championship games here in just a second, but just what a year overall.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's been a really good year. A lot of talent has shown, you know, across the state, everything from 1A to 6A. There's a lot of amazing softball players in the state of Arkansas, and a lot of people, not just here in Arkansas, but a lot of people in other states are starting to take note of it. I was talking to a college coach from Oklahoma this last week, and he said, man, he said, if people don't understand what a gold mine Arkansas is when it comes to softball talent, he said, I'm plucking kids out of Arkansas above everywhere else. And so he was definitely big on the Arkansas talent.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about this whenever we get into the 5A championship. But I saw in the latest rankings from USA Today, now this was as of mid-May, so what, I guess maybe about 10 days ago or so, that they were ranked, Benton was ranked number 7 in the country. Now that was number 3 in the South. I think there was a Texas team and maybe a Mississippi team above them, but ranked number 7 with the opportunity to possibly be in the top 5 in the nation when it's all said and done. That's pretty phenomenal what they've done. And like I said, we'll get into that here in a second. But, of course, we'll take it from the top, starting with 1A. Taylor, they were one of four teams that was a repeat champion from last year that ended up coming in. The champions that came into these state finals ended up going 4-0. And Taylor and 1A in that game on Friday morning ended up beating Greers Ferry Westside, or Westside Greers Ferry, 9-1. Jared, you know, the score to me is really not indicative of how the game went, because Greers Ferry held with them, or I guess I'll refer to them as Westside. I know that's what they prefer, as Westside. They hung with them really through the first four innings. It was 2-1. Taylor scored two runs at the top of the second, and then Westside was able to respond with one more. And it went into the fifth inning at that 2-1 score. And then really after that, Taylor just exploded for four runs, and then they ended up scoring three more in the top of the seventh. And so, you know, Westside, obviously, to get to this point, had a great season. And I was thinking, you know, maybe at the last couple of weeks there, I know that we had initially said once we got into the postseason that it may have been Ouachita or Wonderview that was going to possibly give Taylor a good game. Well, Westside gave them a good game for the majority of this, just like kind of what Guy Perkins did. Guy Perkins in the semifinals kept them to five scoreless innings, but really at the end of the day, it's what we've talked about all season. It seemed like every show that we talked about, it's Taylor and everybody else, and for the most part, they proved that, at least in 1A, as they were overall, for the most part, hardly touched once again throughout the season. And with a new coaching staff and all, they end up winning their fifth straight state title.
Well, I'll tell you, Westside, without a doubt, is a really good team, but Taylor softball is a machine. It is. They turn out good class after good class after good class, and they play a lot of softball and a lot of baseball in Taylor, Arkansas. And you know, they eat, sleep, and breathe softball down there, and it shows. You know, and Westside, to give them all the credit in the world, did. They held them tight for, you know, through four anyway. Can't say enough about McKenna Biddle for Westside. She is an amazing pitcher, great young lady. To be honest, not trying to knock anybody, but, you know, her defense just didn't quite have her back like it should have in that game with Taylor. There was several errors and cost several runs when they did make errors. But the big story to me out of this was Ayla Buford. That girl, as a freshman for Taylor, just absolutely was unreal in the circle. She pitched an outstanding game, and she kept a lot of the good West Side batters off balance. She was just really on her game, mixing up speeds, you know, breaking balls, changing spots. But that changeup was absolutely wicked nasty. I would hate to have to try to hit that changeup that Ayla Buford was throwing for the state championship.
Yeah, it was. And it was that we were noticing in the press box, really just when she would throw it, you could hear kind of some oohs and some ahs from the crowd a couple of times. And then, of course, Coach McHenry talked about it after the game, that that's something that she just loves to watch opposing batters try to hit, because it doesn't happen very often that you get good contact on it, or you get bad contact if you do get any at all. And yeah, you definitely have to tip your hat to Ayla Buford for what she was able to do in her freshman year. I think maybe outside, I know Lauren Leonard is a senior, but for the most part, Taylor's going to bring, they lost a lot off of last year's team. And that's something else that Coach McHenry talked about in the post game, but they're still bringing a lot back. So they're probably not going to go anywhere for a while. It's very likely that we can maybe see. I know that Westside does lose McKenna Biddle, but they do have some coming back. I mean, of course, you look at Lacey Baker there in right field. She actually had a pretty good, she did struggle a little bit defensively, but was one of the two Lady Eagles along with Biddle that went 2-for-4 at the plate that had multiple hits. That, of course, Westside only had 5 total in the game, but Baker had 2 and then Biddle had 2. But this Westside team, like you said, I definitely want to give them tons of credit. I believe this is the second state title all time that they've ever made it to. They did win it in 2007. I actually remember that one. I was a junior in high school. I think I actually might have been in – I wasn't at the game, but I think I might have been in Fayetteville, because that's where the games were played at that time. But just, you know, a great performance. But they definitely came in confident. They didn't come in scared. I think that it's very typical for teams to – and I'm just speaking, of course, generally here – it's typical for teams when you come in to a game against a team that's a dynasty like Taylor, that had won 4 straight titles coming in, that it's maybe a little bit natural to have some nerves. And maybe they did have nerves, but they certainly didn't show it. Like I said, you know, through the first two innings, it was just, really through the first four, it was just a 1-score game. And so you got to tip your hat to Greers Ferry Westside, like you mentioned. And it's going to be definitely fun to watch Ayla Buford in the circle for the next 3 years, along with some of these batters that are coming up. Because, Jared, I mean, you look all the way down the line, and like I said, I know that Leonard is one for sure that's going to be a big loss there in the outfield and center. But you look down the line, you're going to see a lot of these girls still here for the Lady Tigers here in the next 3 years, next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, I do think Taylor is going to be really strong going forward. I do think they lose Carly Downs, which is a big loss.
Yeah, that's a lead off
and Leonard.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they got some strong kids coming in, you know, as freshmen next year. They've got a lot returning. I fully expect Taylor to be right back in the top 3-4 mix and probably playing for another state championship. So,
well, and then 2 more teams that we could possibly expect to see again next year up in Class 2A. Tuckerman, of course, won their second straight state title, a young team that has a lot coming back next year as well. And then also East Poinsett County, that I think pretty much will bring just about it all but maybe one. I know Shanley Williams is one that sticks out, the leadoff hitter in center field. That's a great player for Tuckerman, will be gone. And also I think there might be one. I was thinking of Kenzie Soden, but she's a junior. But still, you know, you bring Gist back, you bring Soden back, And so many other ones. And then you look on the other side at East Poinsett County, and a lot of them that contributed were freshmen. And so, and of course, you've got Keegan McCorkle that's going to come back for her senior year. So as loaded as Class 2A will be next year, I know that that Fordyce is one that will have a lot of seniors coming in. They relied on a lot of their 23 class that made it to the quarterfinals this season. But, Jared, this is another one. Or go ahead.
Does Tuckerman – I don't know this for sure, but I think does Tuckerman move up to 3A next year?
You know what? I had heard that
on the realignment and the reclassification that Tuckerman moves up to 3A. I may be wrong.
That could be true. But that's one that I will be studying at length this summer. So if we do miss, you know, if we mention anything wrong here, definitely let me know, because I have not. I've studied more of the football conferences already, because those came out like at the beginning of the year. But either way, where Tuckerman, I think, appreciate you pointing that out. But either way, wherever Tuckerman goes, they're still. I mean, they did play the toughest schedule in 2A this year, and they did pretty well against that. And so no matter if they go to 3A or wherever, they're still for sure going to be a contender with Giss coming back. And you would assume by next year, you know, Giss is going to be fully healthy, even in the state championship game. I believe it was around the top of the fifth inning. She did show some discomfort in her arm, and that's right around the time that Matt Dillon went to the circle, kind of met with her and talked with her. She ended up staying in until the seventh inning when Kenzie Soden came in and closed it out. But just another great performance from Tuckerman, as we've seen this year. This is the first game in forever, it seems like, that they didn't get a shutout. But, you know, EPC, you got to tip your hat to them. An incredible season, only three losses on the year, and played, you know, what ended up being, to me, a pretty tough schedule. I know some had talked about, you know, in the early stages there, they really weren't challenged. And I mean, for the most part, I think that there's some truth to that. As you would see that they were putting up 15-0 type games. And so when you've got a lineup like they do, and then you've got a pitcher like Keegan McCorkle, now she was definitely not, you know, at her best on Saturday or on Thursday against an incredible lineup, you know, probably the best lineup in Class 2A that Tuckerman has. But they were right there. EPC was right there in the seventh inning. They had bases loaded with the tying runner on. And that's something that Coach Powell pointed out, you know, in the post game, is Tuckerman, they had 13 hits in this game. So it could have been a lot worse. Keegan got out of a lot of situations, and also the defense helped her get out of a lot of situations that could have made this game a lot more lopsided than it was, you know, with just four runs. But EPC, as they have all year, they continue to fight. They continue to scratch and claw. And, you know, it's not how they wanted it to end, but I definitely don't think that Coach Powell and his staff can be upset with the fight that they showed.
Without a doubt. Tuckerman, we talked about Taylor being a machine in one way, in 1A. Tuckerman is the machine in 2A. They're loaded with hitters. They have a really solid defense, and they have two or three outstanding pitchers. And, I mean, when you put that kind of combination together in 2A, it's pretty hard to beat. They're, McKaylee Gist is, she's a beast. There's no other way to say it. I mean, I was at this game watching it in person, and in the fifth inning, without a doubt, her bicep popped out. I mean, you could see it. You could actually physically see kind of a knot on her arm, and you could tell that's when she was showing the discomfort and kind of shaking that arm out. But that kid, she is tough as they come. She worked through it, went in the dugout. What I don't know if she manipulated that arm around or what, but she came back in the next inning throwing fire again, and she managed to get all the way to the seventh inning just being hard to even touch. And it was obvious that something happened with her arm again in the seventh, and she was starting to struggle a little bit. And then Soden come in and, you know, just locked it down to finish. But I'll tell you, watching that game – early on, it felt like Tuckerman was about to blow it open. And like the second, third inning, Tuckerman's about to blow it open. Well, giving EPC all of the credit, they kept making plays and kept getting that third out. Even though Tuckerman stranded a lot of runners and everything, EPC just kept managing to play good enough defense to do what it took to stop any of those big runs from crossing. I think Tuckerman ended up stranding 10 or 12 runners in this that they didn't score. And that's a credit to East Poinsett County, that they just continued to scratch and fight and claw. And right there, they had the bases loaded at the end and a chance to, you know, to get back in or tie the game. So after looking at how lopsided that could have been, they had managed to fight all the way back to that point and had a chance to be right in that game at the end. That's a huge credit to a team that never quits right there. They didn't get down. They didn't get defeated because things weren't going their way. They fought. They played. They really – I was very impressed with EPC and the fact that they never quit trying to make it happen. And, you know, you see that sometimes when a team gets up 3-4 runs on you, the wheels kind of fall off and nothing goes right. But that wasn't the case with EPC. I was very impressed with them as a team. And Keegan McCorkle, watching her pitch, she's a special pitcher. She's not an overpowering kid. She doesn't throw 65, but she has some of the best spin and she moves the ball so well, and she moves it where she wants it. Tuckerman has got some of the best bats in the state, and they showed that. They put the bat on the ball a lot on her, but they also hit a lot of, you know, pop-ups and dribblers and things like that. So she was doing her job in the circle. Very, very good. Two very good teams, without a doubt. I really expect EPC to be back top five again next year, really having another shot at state. And whether Tuckerman's in 2A or 3A, I'm not sure. I've just overheard someone talking. That's why I think I've heard that they were moving up. But whichever class they end up in, they're probably going to be competing, you know, in the last two, three, four teams at the end of the year.
And looking at these rosters, and these can be wrong, they tend to be sometimes, but it looks like that Shanley Williams and also Reagan Washam are the two players that Tuckerman's list. So you're losing two key, you know, players that are starters for you. But then you look over at East Poinsett County, and I think they only lose one, and that's Zoe Constant, who was their first baseman. And so I believe wholeheartedly that you look at this young team. Again, Keegan McCorkle is going to be a senior for East Poinsett County. Then you've got players like that are underclassmen like Taryn Powell, like Kelly Lucas, Mercedes Real, just to name a few there. I do believe before it's all said and done that EPC will have a state championship in the next few years, just because I like what Coach Powell does, you know, just a coach that gets the very best out of his kids. And there's plenty of teams that you could say that about. But I saw EPC play five times this year, and each one of the couple of them were blowouts, a couple of them were run rules and all that stuff. But, you know, the way that they responded in that game, and look, I understand there's all these opinions about how I've got mine too, because I was right behind home plate and I saw it all unfold. But the McCrory game, you know, like with the way that they responded there, whether you think it was a bad call or whatever it may be, the way that they were able to respond after all that stuff happened and then win that regional championship and then go on and win a few close games when it really mattered, you know, those one run games, they won three of in eight games, they won three with that came down to one run. I certainly believe that East Poinsett County will have a state championship within the next 2 to 3 years. I don't think that, you know, that's a crazy thing to say, because, you know, they'll be for sure at least one or two in our preseason polls for next year in Class 2A. So certainly got to tip your hat, like you said, to that. But Jared, when we talk about the, like we just mentioned, some of the youth that Taylor has, the youth that EPC and Tuckerman have, I don't know that it's going to get much as far as with players coming back. You look all the way down Class 3A, starting with the state champions with Ashdown and Atkins. Atkins obviously had a lot of – I don't even know that Atkins had a senior this year, but a lot of sophomores and freshmen that contributed on that team. Boonville, same thing. Lincoln, same thing. I know Baptist Prep, you lose Mackenzie Childers, Taylor Barnes, a few others that were big-time players for them. But also Hackett, all the way down 3A, and you look at that and what they have coming back – 3A is probably going to be the toughest class to decipher next year. I'm already kind of getting headaches thinking about it.
Yeah, without a doubt, 3A is going to be really deep. They were deep this year, but they're going to be really deep again next year. Obviously, Baptist Prep was really good. And, of course, they didn't make it to state championship, you know, and they didn't even have a bad game when they got beat. They had a really good game, and Hackett just played the game of their lives. But looking at that, Baptist Prep is still going to have a ton of talent back, even though they lose a huge one with Mackenzie Childers. You know, Ashdown overall is young. Atkins is very young. There's just probably – I don't know that there was a old class that was very highly ranked in 3A overall. Boonville may lose a couple. You know, I can't think off the top of my head anybody that was in the top 10 or so of 3A that was really senior heavy, though. Most of them are freshmen, sophomores, and a few juniors. So you're going to see a lot of the same teams back really tough again next year for sure.
And I don't think that as high as we had Ashdown and Atkins in our either in our rankings or in the outside looking in pretty much all year. And so I don't think that anybody was necessarily surprised that they got there. But you think about the teams that have been at the top all season and played so consistent, you know, Hackett all year. I know that they lost a few down the stretch there, but they were consistent all year. Lincoln was very consistent all year. Of course, Baptist Prep, too. Boonville was quietly there. I don't think that we're the only ones who didn't really take notice of what they were doing. Only had one loss going into the postseason, just a phenomenal year that they had. And then Atkins ended up, you know, upsetting them, at least an upset on paper from what happened there. But in this state championship game, this is another one that I just don't think that the score is necessarily indicative of how the game went, because yes, Ashdown got the shutout. Ashdown's been an extremely offensive power team this year, and so has Atkins. They've hit a lot of home runs, just as Ashdown has. But looking at just the box score, Jared, you know, like where it really hurt Atkins was they left 10 runners stranded on base. So, you know, the Ashdown defense really clamped down. Madison Cook had a pretty good game in the circle, but it was really just, to me, Ashdown's offensive firepower, running the bases effectively and getting runs, and Atkins just couldn't quite finish it. It was kind of like EPC got runners on base in the 2A game, just couldn't get them all to come home. That was kind of similar to what happened with Atkins in the 3A game. They just couldn't get runners in. It's not that they necessarily had a bad performance, per se. They just couldn't quite finish the job.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you look at leaving 10 stranded and you don't score a run, that's a deal breaker when it comes to winning a ball game. I mean, because if you just score half of those runs, you're in a ball game. And but to give all the credit to Ashdown, they have a very good defense. They have speed all over the field, and it helps them on defense. It helps them on the base paths. They had several stolen bases. They were very aggressive on the base paths. They hit the ball very well. They've been a good hitting team all year. And to speak a little bit to Madison Cook, she is a very intense competitor. I mean, I actually had the opportunity to coach Maddie Cook just a little bit in travel ball. And one thing that I gave her a hard time about was, you know, you're so serious all the time. She is all business. When she's between those lines, she is all business. She wants to win. She wants to compete every play. And that's a big credit to her as far as how she gets things done wherever she is on the field, but especially when she's in the circle. And I gave her a hard time a few times back when the short stretch that she played for me. Hey, you got to smile more, kid. You got to smile more. Well, she wants to win, and she's intense, and she's focused. And that's one thing I'm very impressed with her. And I'm proud for her that she was able to get a state championship here. She's a good kid, and she's an intense competitor. And with this team from Ashdown, they're going to be good again for several more years. They've got a lot of talent. They're going to return a lot. And Atkins, without a doubt, I think has a real shot at being back in this for a state championship next year. They're going to find a way to start putting some of those runs across, and they're going to score. You know, they're going to score some big amounts of runs, I think, in the future. They're a good hitting team. They'll get it turned on and probably be – I think they're going to probably be playing good chance. Some of these same two teams very well may be playing for a state championship again next year.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that this is a team – I would not be shocked if plenty of the people from Atkins would tell you that they might have been – I mean, some may not, but I'm sure some would tell you that they were probably about a year ahead of schedule. And that's, you know, there's other teams that we've said that about too, not knocking them in any way. It's, I think Sheridan was one that you look at that you're probably like, okay, they probably made it a little bit further than most people expected because they're extremely fresh. They relied on a lot of freshmen, a lot of sophomores, just like Atkins did. But you look at the game, Jayla Coleman and Cariel Forbes have been two of the top offense, especially Cariel. I think she had 12 or 13 home runs on the season. And so, looking what they have done on the offensive side, it's not shocking that they were the two that had multiple hits. You know, I know Kylie Irwin was 0-for-2 at the plate, the catcher, but she's just been a phenomenal catcher all year. And with what she's been able to do, I mean, you can go down all across the boards. Like I said, it's just an extremely offensive firepower team with what Ashdown has been able to do. I've heard that from opposing coaches. That's what we kind of gathered just looking at their stats this year. And so, you know, it's going to be a dogfight. Class 3A, it doesn't matter the sport. I feel like, I mean, I know, you know, like in girls basketball, Bergman was the hands down, you know, top dog, especially finishing the season with a state championship undefeated. But then even looking at football, even in boys basketball, it seems like it doesn't matter the sport. It is always just so incredibly deep and so incredibly unpredictable. You know, we thought 100% that Baptist Prep would be hoisting the trophy once again, just because there was nobody that was going to beat all they were. From top to bottom, the most talented team in Class 3A. I don't really think that you're going to hear much debate from anybody on that. But just what with Ashdown has been able to do, Coach Palat had told us when I was getting some information from him to do the softball preview, that they had talked about holding the rope. Now, Ashdown had a phenomenal year and were consistent all season. But there were a couple of losses in there that it's like, well, you know, I know it's softball, it's a funny game, but I don't really understand that one. But they didn't worry about that when any kind of adversity that hit, which was not very much, for the most part, it was success. They just held on to the rope and they continued to believe in themselves. And that's what you have to do to win a state championship. And, you know, I think with Matt Porter from Atkins, he's going to schedule very tough. He did that this year. They played well against a tough schedule. You know, you're playing Baptist Prep twice in your conference, and they played them once in the postseason. And then on top of some of the other teams that they played, I think they played Lincoln twice as well. So I guarantee you he's going to schedule again tough next year, and it wouldn't be shocking to see Atkins in the exact same position or even Ashdown in the same position. But there's a lot of other teams there, though, that are going to be very tough, and it will be an absolute dogfight in Class 3A next year.
Without a doubt.
So going up to Class 4A, this was one, Jared, that I was shocked. I'll be straight up. No disrespect to, I think plenty would maybe agree with me. No disrespect whatsoever to Valley View. They came in and just absolutely shut down an extremely powerful lineup, 1-9, that Boomer Brown has said, you know, was possibly his best batting lineup that he's ever had. And they've proved that all year. But Riley Smith may have been the best kept secret in the state of Arkansas this year. I've talked to multiple people from Northeast Arkansas throughout the season about various teams, and I heard her name mentioned. I knew she was a good player, but then I saw her stats leading up to this game, and I'm like, whoa, okay, I didn't realize that she was putting up these kind of numbers. And the one number that really jumped off the sheet to me, and I believe this is correct, she threw 86 pitches in the state championship game, and 70 of them were strikes. So she was on the money, but also, too, her infield was. It just seemed like no matter where the ball was hit, how high, how low, they were coming up with it. I don't think that they, to my knowledge, I think there was maybe one, yeah, there was one error in the game, but for the most part, the team was sharp overall. And that's another one that Nashville necessarily didn't play bad per se. Mason McJunkins, you know, pitched a pretty decent game overall, but just could not get the ball into play and get on the base and score some runs for Nashville. Now, they did strike first in the first inning at the bottom of the first. And then in the second and third, Valley View scored a run each, and that's all they would need. It was pretty much all defense from there. But you got to give it up for this Nashville senior class. We'd be remiss if we didn't mention the things that, as Boomer Brown calls them, the Magnificent Seven. 86-14 since their freshman year. Now, they would have gone over 100 wins had COVID not been cut short like 4 or 5 games in. And so what this senior class has played together since they were 5, 6 years old, created an incredible bond. And so, you know, if you're them, you certainly hate the way that it ended. You don't ever want to get runner up. You always want to hoist the gold trophy at the end of the season, but definitely nothing to be ashamed about whatsoever. This was a phenomenal year for them. And I think overall for what they have done, when you look at their entire body of work, of course, Valley View is the number one team because they won the state championship. But some of these teams that Nashville played and either beat or hung with, you got to tip your hat to them.
Well, there's no question in my mind that Nashville was the best team in Class 4A this year. If you want to look at the entire year, who the best team in 4A was. But to give Valley View all of the credit that they deserve, they were absolutely an outstanding team all year long, but they really played exceptionally well on this run through regionals and state, and especially in state. I watched Riley Smith pitch down at Nashville against Malvern, and that's the first time I got to see her in person. I was really impressed with her. I was like, she fills the strike zone up. She kind of, like you said, she doesn't throw very many pitches that are, you know, she uses the edges of the plate, that kind of thing, but she does not throw a lot of off the plate pitches. She does not waste pitches. She's all business. She's very focused. And she doesn't get shook. That's a big thing that I was really impressed with about Riley Smith from Valley View, was that she doesn't get shook. Even when somebody gets a couple hits or anything like that, she's the kind of pitcher you want, that mentality on to the next pitch. Okay, I can't do anything about that pitch, but I can get this one. And she really, in my opinion, she was a good pitch, really good pitcher all year long, but she got better and better and better. And it was a really big deal for Valley View to go and win this state championship, because I think a lot of it was behind the strength of her consistently getting better all year long. She started out good, but she was really exceptional by the end of the year. And their bats, Valley View's bats, impressed me. The two games that I got to see them play, Valley View just put the bat on the ball. It didn't matter who was pitching, how well they were throwing, they put the bat on the ball. They hit some rockets against Malvern when I watched them. And then against Nashville, they had several base hits. I think they had 7 or 8 base hits against Macy McJunkins. And if you look back at the year, there's hardly anyone the entire season that put up that many hits against Macy McJunkins. I think there might have been 2 games that I saw she gave up 5 hits or something throughout the year. But it just – Valley View was able to put the bat on the ball more than anybody did all year. And it was the difference, you know, a 2-1 ball game, both good pitchers, but a really tight ball game. Valley View is able to put the bat on the ball and make it happen.
Yeah, I can't get over the fact that, like, you know, again, I knew who Riley Smith was throughout the season, but I'll straight up say I miss not adding her to the pitchers list because I didn't know about her. I had asked multiple, I'd like know about at least how high, like how highly she was playing. I wasn't aware of that. And so, like I said, I got her stats this past week, and I'm like, holy cow, man. And, you know, I'd heard plenty of, you know, obviously you hear the McKaylee Gist, the Kenzie Sodens, the Keegan McCorkles, even the Morgan Garners from Rector up around that area. And there's plenty more. I'm just thinking of the ones off the top of my head. But, yeah, Riley's definitely in that same category as them. I mean, she was just absolutely nails. She's fearless on the mound. Can't say enough good things about her. And like you said, they're bats. That was the main thing that I focused on in the preview. I did mention, you know, Riley's success this season, but that was what I kept keying on, is Macy McJunkins going to be able to shut down this lineup? Because just like Nashville had a powerful lineup, so did they. Anna Winkfield, Lexi Davis, Mackenzie Whitlock, who I think before it's all said and done could be, you know, one of the best shortstops that we've seen in Class 4A. Of course, I think Valley View is staying in 4A, but just as a freshman, some of the things that she was able to do and just the athletic ability that she has, the sky is the limit for her. And, of course, Lexi Davis, a great catcher that I just mentioned there. But, yeah, I was completely baffled by the fact that and again, you know, I'm not saying that, like, you know, this was for strategic reasons or anything like that. But the fact that nobody really even mentioned, when I would talk to people and say, hey, who are some to look out for in NEA and Riley was just hardly mentioned. Again, I don't think it's out of disrespect or anything, but I just don't know that maybe I talked to people that didn't see her as much, but was definitely extremely impressed. So major shout out to her. Look forward to, I think she's either a sophomore or junior, so we'll get to see more of her and look forward to that. But up in Class 5A, Benton ended up, this was the one that got postponed. It was supposed to be the last game of the entire weekend. Of course, we had soccer, baseball, and softball going on throughout the weekend, Thursday through Saturday. But we were getting nervous, Jared. I'll tell you, I was up there with some of the AAA guys and, of course, Scott Nethery, the Benton athletic director, and we were sitting there watching this game. And beforehand, we were trying to be positive and say, hey, we're going to at least get through this. But about midway through the second, I think it was, that was when we started getting calls that, hey, Hot Springs is really bad, and it's traveling right up the path coming through Benton, traveling northeast. So we're kind of just not trying to pay attention to our phones, but also kind of give a little peek at it just to make sure that it's good. And right after we get to the top of the fifth, so, of course, GCT gets out to a 2-1 lead, and we get to the top of the fifth inning. Alyssa Houston came in to pitch in relief for Elena Scott at the top of the fourth. We get into the fifth. There's two runners on, and then Alyssa strikes out the first batter to get the first out, and then right after that was when Coach Nethery said, hey, let's call this, or at least we need to put it on hold. And there was at least three or four resets of the clock because there was tons of lightning in the area before they finally just said, hey, we're done. We're going to postpone this to tomorrow. So we ended up finishing it up at 2 o'clock, which I think I was at the athletic complex for maybe like an hour and a half, 2 hours. It was really quick between getting everything ready to go again and the post game and all that. But before we talk about Benton, I want to start off tipping my hat. We always want to give the credit where credit's due. You know, both teams, the fact that they did make it this far in a grueling season that softball is. But Greene County Tech, phenomenal year, a brutal schedule that they played. You know, they started on spring break or around the time that the season started. Around spring break, they went and played in that Gulf Coast Classic, had a great appearance there. And then they ended up, one of their losses of the season was a 3-0 loss at Benton on April 14th, I believe it was, and that was the last time that they had lost before losing in the state championship game. But you know what? They had the lead. They came out ready to play. They were not – I talked about earlier how when you are facing a team like Taylor, if you're a 1A school, sometimes it's easy to maybe have a little bit of jitters or a little bit of not fear but just some nervousness. I didn't sense that once from Greene County Tech, whether it be on Saturday or even having to stop the game and then come back and play on Sunday. I didn't sense that once from them. They were upbeat. They were happy to be there. But it wasn't just that they were happy to be there. They were there to win it. And they played very tough, but once you got to Sunday, they just were not able to hit Alyssa Houston. Alyssa just had too good of stuff that day, and they just came up short. But you certainly can't discredit them whatsoever.
Well, I didn't get to see the first part of the game on Saturday before the weather delay. But just from trying to review back and looking at how things were going, you know, a team like Benton that's gone undefeated for two seasons, sometimes people are talking about destiny. Oh, they're destined to win the state championship. That I'm going to tell you, if that's ever true, there may have been some destiny going on here, because I think the weather stoppage might have really benefited Benton in this one for sure. It gave them a chance to reset and turn their game back on for the next day. Greene County Tech's a really good ball team. They've been good all year. We've talked about them several times. I'll tell you, for Greene County Tech, Carly Burrow has just been a really phenomenal pitcher. She did a good job. I watched her against, I believe it was Sheridan earlier in state tournament in Hot Springs, and she was just very impressive. She's another one of those. She did, even when Sheridan was able to get a few hits, she just never got shook. She just, I'm all business. I'm going to do my job. Whatever happened on that pitch goes away. I'm going to win the next pitch and get it done. I was very impressed with her. And Greene County Tech's got some amazing hitters. You know, Kylie Stokes is a good hitter. The Sage Girl, there were several that could really smash the ball around. Benton, though, to even talk about what they've done the last 2 years, I mean, it's mind-boggling. To be able to go 63-0 over two seasons, tell me where that's happened anywhere else. I mean, it's probably only happened a handful of times ever for a team to go through the kind of schedule, playing the high competition that they have, and to go undefeated two seasons in a row. Alyssa Houston is amazing. Elena Scott's a great pitcher. And Benton is just loaded top to bottom. In this ball game, though, I really feel like the weather stoppage benefited Benton just a little bit. Greene County Tech had the lead, had a little momentum, and about, you know, that stoppage right at that point is really it kind of just shuts that momentum down. And I don't think that at all that Greene County Tech was in awe of Benton or anything like that. They came in, like you said, focused, dialed in, ready to win a game. And they had a good game plan, and they gave Benton all they wanted in this one.
Yeah, I'll start with the weather. And I wholeheartedly agree with you, and I do, mainly because I would have regardless if they would have said this, but both Alyssa And that, this was pretty much the main point of my game story was Alyssa mentioned that the reset was good. Coach Cox mentioned that. Now, that's not to say, and I'm not saying you're saying this either, that's not to say that the because of the weather is the reason why they came back and won this game. But Alyssa basically mentioned, I saw her come up immediately after the first weather delay. She came up and talked to her family, talked to her pitching coach, and I recapped all this in the story, but she just said, she told her pitching coach, and that's the thing too, she wasn't throwing bad. She struck out, I believe, two of four batters that she faced in the fourth. I know that she had at least two strikeouts, and then, of course, had that one in the fifth when she had two base runners on already. But she just didn't feel like she was pitching at her best. So she asked her pitching coach, hey, you know, help me. What do I need to do? And she just essentially got her back to the basics, you know, just look, put your head down, have fun, just relax. And that's essentially what the rest of her family told her. And she came out extremely relaxed and ready to go that next day. And so talking about what Benton's done, yeah, Jared, it's hard to put it into words because it is so tough to go undefeated, whether it doesn't matter what the sport is. I don't care if it's water polo, chess, what I don't care what it is. It's very hard, not impossible, but it's very, very hard to go undefeated. But to do it in this game, you're a softball coach. You know how tough it is to do something like that in this game in a baseball or softball setting. But to do it 2 years in a row and against and I see people say all the time, oh, Benton should be in 6A. Well, they played 6A competition. They beat Bentonville, the two-time defending 6A state champion. They beat them three times. They all these other teams that we had in our Super 7 rankings all season, Bentonville West, Cabot, the state runner-up, Rogers, they beat all of them. They've literally everything thrown in front of them. They have beaten. They've beaten top 5A competition. They beat Nashville, the state runner up for 4A, and so and also beat some out of state teams. And like I mentioned at the top of the segment here, the last that I had seen, they are number 7 in the country per USA Today, 3rd in the South. Like I said, I think that there's a Mississippi and maybe a Texas team in there, but either way, third best team in the South per USA Today. And they have a chance to possibly finish in the top 5. I mean, you just cannot. But you know what, too, Jared, is what I really love. I was around Coach Cox a lot this weekend, and we've emailed back and forth quite a bit throughout this season. But just how humble she is, how grateful that she is, and that team reflects it, too. They're not one of those that's going to go out and showboat and try to act all arrogant. One of the first things they did after they celebrated, they went over to the GCT players and they gave them hugs and, you know, uplifted. Of course, GCT's obviously like, and I've been in that position of losing a state championship. It hurts like crap. But they went over there, Benton did, and, you know, they consoled them or whatever you want to call it, consoled them, lifted them up, whatever. But that's what this Benton team is about. That's what Heidi Cox is about. And their whole entire, all of them that are associated. That's what is really more impressive to me is just they're so appreciative with what they've been able to do. Not a single ounce of arrogance between any of them. And I think that's what really speaks volumes about this Benton team.
Yeah, absolutely. I spent a little bit of time around some of the Benton players, not a lot, but I've talked to a few of them in the stands and I know a couple of them personally from some summer camps and things, you know, since I'm involved in travel ball, and they're really down to earth. They're really just good kids. They just want to play softball. They want to compete and have fun. And I have not seen a lot of arrogance or anything out of any of them. And in a place where they kind of have rightfully earned a chance to be that way because of their performance, they're very level, calm. They're confident, but they just go to work, do their job, and they're coachable, and everything that I've seen out of them, they've been very respectful to other teams, even when they were killing people. You know, just like going over to congratulate and console, or however you want to say it, Greene County Tech afterwards. You know, that's a tough loss for Greene County Tech to have a chance to beat a team that's been undefeated for 2 years there, have a lead, and then, you know, a weather delay come in and it kills your momentum, and then you end up losing the next day. That's a really tough pill to swallow if you're the losing team there. And Greene County Tech handled that with the utmost class also. I was very, very impressed with Greene County Tech the few times I got to see them this year. They are absolutely a very classy team. great sportsmanship, hard work. You can tell they're well coached. They work really hard. And it wouldn't surprise me a bit for Greene County Tech to have a program that just stays in that top two or three for a long time.
And so I just got, and as we're recording here, I went on Facebook and looked at their Facebook page. Benton is going to finish as the, get ready for this, they're going to finish as the number three team in the country. I don't know if they're going to finish there, but that's where they are now, because I know other teams are playing. But they are currently, as of this week, number three in the country behind Lake Creek, Texas, and Roncalli, Indiana. That is insane. We in little old Arkansas, we've got a softball team that is ranked the number three team in the country. I don't think that's never been done. There's no way, because there's softball has only been in Arkansas for, like, fast pitch has only been here for like 20, 25 years or something like that. So number three, I'm speechless. That's insane.
Well, when you watch them play, you know that they've earned that spot. And I'm going to be honest with you, I would put this Benton team up against any team in the country. I'd be willing to lay some of my money down on Benton.
Yeah, that's nuts, man. Wow. So, yeah, definitely a big shout-out to both of those teams. Represented the 5A well, both Benton and Greene County Tech. And taking it up to 6A, finally here, last but not least, Bentonville 3, Cabot 1 in the 6A state championship. Jared, really what this came down to was the first inning. Both the Caleb Bernard and the MVP, Ryan Sanders, pitched great games. They gave up three total hits. Sanders gave up two, and then Akayla gave up one, but also she hit the home run that gave Benton the one run. I believe that was in the top of the leadoff at the fourth inning. So, but you can't say enough about Ryan Sanders. Just the way that her defense also played really well behind her, but I believe it was 10 batters she struck out. Sophomore, extremely another one of those really humble kids. Immediately, as soon as we talked to her in the post game, she was quick to deflect all of the attention off of her and give it to her family and her coaches, her teammates, God, everybody all around. And so she didn't want the credit, but she certainly deserves plenty of it for what she's been able to do, not just in that game, but this season. She's been their top pitcher. Of course, they've got a really good one right behind her in Casey Wood, who's primarily the team's third baseman, the Arkansas commit. But this was one, you know, I think, Jared, a lot of kind of goes back to what we've said. I've said a few times already, Bentonville, this was their fifth state championship since 2016. They are the defending state champions. They've been in this place a lot, but this was their sixth straight state title game. And so I think a lot of teams do come in and they have a little bit of butterflies. But once again, I can say I did not sense that from Cabot. Chris Cope is an intense coach. This is really the first time I've seen tons of film on Cabot, but I have not seen them in person. But after every single inning, he rounds his team up and he gives them a pep talk, and he's very enthusiastic. Very nice guy, but he's very, very intense. And so I'll tell you, they are a direct reflection, just like any team is, of their coach. They were not scared. They were going to come at Bentonville, and that's exactly what they did for the most part. But a sloppy inning with some wild pitches and an error or two in the first inning just really was what put the nail in the coffin for them early. But they still fought throughout the entire game.
Well, I did not get to see this game as much as I'd wanted to. I did not get to see it. I did go back and watch a few highlights and some things. But without a doubt, if you look at the stat lines, a very telling thing to me is Ryan Sanders, 14 Ks. She didn't allow a single walk. She only gave up two hits. You know, so when you start talking about that, that's just a very impressive stat line from her against a really talented Cabot team. And then when you flip on the other side of that, you know, A.K. Bernard, she had an outstanding game herself. Couple free passes there. And I'll tell you, we're talking about two great teams like that, sometimes that's the difference maker, is those one or two kids, you know, get on with a walk or a hit batter or something. Sometimes that's a difference maker, because you kind of sense coming into this game, it wasn't going to be a scoring fest. It was going to be a pitcher's duel. So, you know, how your defense responds and whether or not you allow those base runners, it's everything. But she had a great stat line. She had eight strikeouts. She only gave up one hit the entire game. I mean, A.K. Bernard's been one of the best pitchers in the whole state all year long. everybody I talked to talked about what a great pitcher she was. And then Ryan Sanders had a great game. It really came down to the difference in one or two base runners. And both great teams, both probably will be back next year, right back in the same position, I would say.
Yeah, and I shorted Sanders on that. She had 14 strikeouts, not 10. Sorry about that. But, yeah, I agree with you. This is another one. You look at all these teams, man. There's really not anyone that loses an insane amount. I know Bentonville, off the top of my head, I know they lose Elena Rushing, their stud third or center fielder. But bring back, yeah, a ton, you know, including their two pitchers and Casey and Sanders and Casey Wood. And then Casey will be back, of course, at third base if she's not pitching. But another – you know, feel good type of moment that I do want to point out that Coach Kent Early is the class act. He's very well known. Of course, you know, his dad, Alvy, was a legendary coach down at UAM. Coach Heidi Cox from Benton, actually, while he was there. But yeah, I believe Alvy is the winningest collegiate coach in any sport across the board in Arkansas history with like over 1,400 wins, something crazy. But Coach Early, want to give him a shout out for immediately, really before his team was done celebrating. He went over to Bernard and basically told her, hey, you know, look, incredible game, great performance, just really couldn't give her enough praise. And then when he was talking to us, that was the thing that he made sure that he told us was, look, man, you know, she's an extremely high, a great competitor, great kid, and just the way that she performed is certainly, you definitely want to bring that up for mention. And just talked about how both teams have two great pitchers and even better people. And so you always want to point out those moments. Yes, I understand sports is, you know, you want to hear about the, you know, who hit two or three home runs in a game or who pitched a perfect game. But it's these moments that one of those, as they say, real recognizes real type things. And, yeah, it would not shock me if both of these teams are in the same position. You know, I think 6A is going to be another one that'll be extremely competitive with Bentonville certainly starting there at the top as the back-to-back state champions. But just really, you know, recapping all of this, man, you know, this was my first year of doing statewide coverage. And so I know, you know, Jared, of course, you've been an extremely massive help with that. But I want to just basically take a second here to sincerely thank every coach, every parent, anybody that's been involved in helping us get stuff on a team or like whether it be stats or information, whatever it may be. I mean, you guys go as we go as you guys go. I mean, we can't do what we do without getting that information and trying to give the best coverage as possible. And did we make mistakes? Absolutely. I'll admit to many of them on a daily basis. But we hope that, you know, we help bring your school's coverage, your players' coverage. And I'm hoping that with a full offseason that it'll get even better again next year. You know, it's a bittersweet time. I'm excited to spend some time with my girls, my wife, you know, this week, you know, with the girls getting out on Wednesday and going in, probably going to go do some hiking later this week with some of the night. I know it's going to get nasty on Tuesday and Wednesday, but this week it's for the most part going to be pretty nice weather, so I'm ready for a break. But at the same time, you know, this is bittersweet because you hate to see all of this come to an end.
Yeah, definitely. I'm a little bummed out that high school ball is wrapping up. It's going to be a long off season as far as the high school factor side of it. The one thing that I'm very thankful for, exactly what you said, all of the coaches and the people who are willing to get us stats, information, storylines, the behind the scenes stuff. And I tell you, the connections that I made just during this softball season, I think will make us so much better even next year because we have so many more contacts to get information now. People that we didn't know about or find out about till late in the season this year. We know about them going into next year, all those things. I think next year is going to be an amazing year, not only for softball, but for being able to cover softball because we're going to have all of those connections established on the front end. We're going to be able to look at a lot of stuff preseason and build those stories up and learn more and more as we go. I'm not going to say that I'm going to get a little time off of family here. I hope you get to go spend some time with your girls for sure. We're starting up full tilt boogie on travel season, and we play this weekend again. We played this last weekend, didn't have our best weekend, but we knocked a little rust off, and by our third game of the day, I could see things starting to dial in, and our girls are going to be pretty salty.
Yeah.
So we're going to be right into travel season. season. But the nice thing about that, for us, travel season is going to be a really good chance for me to talk to a lot of these girls that we covered in high school, because I will see them at camps, at tournaments. So I'll get a chance to get a lot of face-to-face time with a lot of these talented girls in the field. And it'll be nice to get some of those behind-the-scenes stories and conversations and talk about the things that they're looking forward to going into next year.
Yeah, certainly wish you the best. And I'm going to have to for sure come out and catch some games in the this summer. Wish you and your girls the best in all that. And so I'm going to try to make my rounds with a couple of different teams. I'd like to see you guys. I want to see the Sticks and the Firecrackers and all those teams that we've talked about. Of course, Tulsa Elite. I know they go a little bit further normally than where I'm going to travel. So definitely we'll keep up with that through social media. But nonetheless, guys, we can't thank you enough. And this is not the end. You know, hopefully we're going to have stuff throughout the summer as far as the podcast goes, and we'll have some. We're going to shift gears over to the fall sports that we'll really start putting previews out here in June and July. You can, of course, follow our social medias to keep up with all of that. But yeah, the goal is hopefully next week starting next week into what will take us pretty much to around July 4th is. The goal is to have all the state championship coaches, baseball and softball, on for an interview to recap the seasons. And so hopefully we'll get that all worked out. That's the plan for now. But nonetheless, you can always read our stuff, of course, on Scorebook Live. We've got all the recaps of the soccer, baseball, softball, all the state championship games that you can check out. And then, of course, you can always listen to the podcast on scorebooklive.com under the Arkansas tab, or in the top left corner on Spotify. And if there's anything we're missing, please let us know, arprepextra@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. For Kevin Bohannon and Jared Hawthorne, I'm Kyle Sutherland. We will catch you next time.